in Maseches Megillah. And Maseches Megillah, the first parak, although it's cut off at the top, the copy I gave you, it's the first parak of Maseches Megillah, Halacha Tes. The Babli, which you saw, was in Maseches Shabbos, but the Yerushalmi here is in Maseches Megillah. So here it says, in Halacha Tes in the Mishnah, I should mention that the Yerushalmi is about each Mishnah, and the Yerushalmi is called a separate halacha. That's in fact until very recently, and even today, very often Yerushalmi, the location of Yerushalmi Gemaras is identified not by the page number, like they do in the Babli, because there is a standard Vilna edition of Yerushalmi only came into use very, very late, in the 1920s or 1930s, I forget when. So therefore, very often the location of Yerushalmi is not identified by the Vilna Shas edition, but rather it's identified by the Perek and the Halacha, meaning you find the Perek and you find the Mishnah which is associated with that number, and then there's not much Gemara usually to look through. Usually you can find that way the whatever you're looking for. So that was, Halacha Tes means this is the ninth Mishnah, or the ninth section of Mishnah is dealt with in the first Perek of Megillah. Okay? So, you have here in the Mishnah, Eimin Tzorim L'Tzilin Mezuzos. There's no difference between Sifrei Torah and Tzilin and Mezuzos. El Shasforim Nichsamim B'chol Lashon. The Sifrei Torah can be written in any language. That's an Eimin. Says the Korban Eidah, which is the, in where you will find Rashi, in the Vilna Shas. The Korban Eidah says, B'chol Lashon B'ksav U'V'Lashon Shalkol Uma. You can write a Sefer Torah in any writing and in any language. See, we're so cruel, we restrict ourselves to Hebrew and Hebrew. But it wasn't that way, according to the Mishnah. According to the Mishnah, you actually could write a Sefer Torah in any language. Okay? The Tzilin Mezuzos in the Chavim Ella Ashuris. Tzilin and Mezuzos can only be written in Ashuris. Now, Ashuris, we said it several days ago, is the block print which we have today. That's called Ashuris, the Syrian print. We haven't yet explained why. We probably won't explain why until tomorrow. But Tzilin Mezuzos can only be written in Ashuris, and the exception also only in Hebrew. Yes?
Why is there a difference like in the styles of
Ashkenazi
and Sephardi writing?
It's
both Ashuris, both
of them. Yeah, that's custom. It just things develop over time. Yeah. There are very two significant changes. There are one or two, but not very many. So it just develops over time that way. To style. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel there, at Svarim, Loitiro Shichtu Elivari. He says, you know what, even it's Sefer Torah. Now it's written in any language, can't write in English. The only language which is Sefer Torah written, and by association, the only alphabet in which Sefer Torah is written, is Greek. Okay, not any of the other languages. Okay, so let's learn a little bit of Yerushalmi here today. Even that which is not directly relevant to our topic.
Oh, so they take Mishnahs from the Gemara and they
The Mishnahs were not in the Gemara originally. The Mishnahs were a separate body of work compiled by Rabbi Nasi around the year 300. And the Talmud, both the Talmud Yerushalmi and Talmud Babri, are commentaries on the Mishnah. So it's not as if it's... In fact, Yerushalmi was edited before the Babri.
Oh.
It's an earlier Talmud.
This Mishnah is often said that it's in the
Seventh
Megillah, right?
It's in the Seventh Megillah in the Mishnah.
So the Gemara there is different.
Of course, but the Gemara there is Babli.
Yeah.
And it's Yerushalmi. It might be totally different. Usually there's some parallels, but it might be totally different, right?
Okay.
So it says here, Ksiv, Vayikol Oretz Tzafah Kassus Vorim HaKodim. It says, before the Tower of Babel, all the land was one language, and Dvarim Achodim, which seems to mean the same thing, right? Dvarim are statements. You don't understand. So I have the Mishnah, the Gemara.
Okay. Where about? I'm not finding it.
Gemara, see.
Yeah?
Okay. Everybody, does anybody else see it? Does everybody else who has a page see it? Okay. So, see, it says, Vayikar Tzafa Achas Dvarim Achodim. It says all the land was one language, and Dvarim Achodim seems to mean the same thing. It means there was one type of word. So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yochanan had a machlokas. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yochanan had an argument. What it means? Chanamar, one says, Shayu Mizadrim B'Shivim Lashon, that even before the Tower of Babel, See, this is something which you don't find about me. It's important to notice. Even before the Tower of Babel came into being, I mean, even before the punishment of the Tower of Babel, which was the dispersion, there were sentient languages. They existed beforehand. It's just that beforehand, everybody understood everybody else's language. In other words, you didn't need interpreters, translators. Everybody understood everybody else's language before the Tower of Babel.
Is that because of the different nations that came out of Shem, Ham, and Yahweh?
It could be, but it could be it goes back even before that. It could be it goes antediluvian. It could be it goes back to before the Babel. We don't know. So he said, if the idea of Dvarim HaSafa Achas means that a common language. And therefore, Dvarim HaKodim, even though there are many, many Dvarim, many ways of saying things, they all could understand each other, and they all HaKodim, meaning they were unified. So the common language means they were able to understand each other, even though there were different languages in terms of the way they were expressing themselves. Okay? The Chorona Amar, the other one said, that Shoyumadavin Beloshon Yechido Shel Olam, on the contrary, that Dvarim HaKodim means they're speaking in the unified tongue. What's the unified tongue? The unified tongue is the tongue used by the one who unifies heaven and earth, who's the one who unifies heaven and earth, God. And that means they're all speaking the Lashon HaKodesh. Prior to the Tower of Babel, everybody spoke Hebrew, the holy language. Okay? It's a very basic machlokas, very basic limited opinion. Tani Bar Kapara. Bar Kapara is what at the Braisa. Right, a Braisa is a material which was compiled by the Tanoim, but it didn't make the cut to get into the Mishnah. When they edited the Mishnayos, they left out many Braisos, which so it's external material. So Bar Kapara, the Braisa, was said, Yas Elohim Yafet, well actually this is a Patuk so far, God, Noah's blessing to Yafet was God should be, Yafet means something which is pretty or beautiful, right? So God should do beautiful things to Yafet. Yafet came to Yafet, he scorned the holy shame, and he should dwell in the tent of shame. What does that mean? According to Bar Kapara's Brisa here, say you medapin to the shono shul Yafet, but all those who say that they should be allowed to speak Greek in the tent of shame. Meaning that all the languages are considered to be inferior to Greek. Greek is considered to be, don't ask me why, but Greek is considered, ancient Greek is considered to be a very aesthetically pleasing and refined language. And therefore, Yeah, but the languages existed before they worshipped idols. So the idea is that this language, which is Greek, is permitted to be spoken, or encouraged to be spoken, perhaps even, in the tent of shame.
Who's
Shane? Shane is the Semite. And he's us.
Oh.
No,
so,
yeah, no.
So we said yesterday all languages came from Hebrew. Meaning that even the Greek language, you said it's parallel with Aleph, so on and so forth. So Greek, it means it was separate language from Hebrew. It didn't belong to Hebrew, right?
Why? What makes you say that?
Because you said it, that the language was developed before. You just said something about the Greek language that it was developed before they were worshiping idols, no?
It was developed either after the time of the Tower of Babel, that was the first time it came on the scene, or previously. It existed previously in whatever shape or form it existed, but it was still could have stemmed in a way from Hebrew, because obviously if God used Hebrew to create heavens and earth, and all other languages came after that, even if they came earlier than the Tower of Babel, so nonetheless, there would be the possibility of similarity, but it would be likely that one would stem from the other. That's my hunch. I couldn't say that for sure. I didn't say it for sure that either. But that's my hunch. That's what I think things were. Yeah.
What does that mean exactly, that it can be, you should draw kind of that he's able to speak the language of the Greeks. I understand that there was kind of a...
Wait a second, before you go on. What do you think it means in the context of the Mishnah here? In context of something which we missed in the Mishnah?
I have no idea.
I'll
tell you what I know, okay? I know that you can write the Torah in Greek.
How do you know that?
Because somebody rabbi translated it.
No, from this passage.
Yeah?
That's what it means.
Yeah.
So Shimon Gamliel said you could write this all in Greek. Where does he know that from? From here.
From there? Yeah. I don't know. So that was where it was written down?
Yeah. That's the exact point. What does it mean that Greek can be spoken in the sense of shame? That the Torah can be written in Greek.
Okay.
Okay?
Alright.
So, yeah.
But didn't Raphael give rise to other countries, other nations, other than Raphael?
True, but the Gemara actually, I don't know if it's over here explicitly, but somewhere else, the Gemara says maybe later on, that Yefes implies a beautiful language. And the most beautiful language which descends from all the nations of Yefes is Greek. Okay, so the Gemara, I don't know where that is exactly here, but that is,
that's
so Covenant A that brings it down here.
Is that the case, or is it really because they're trying to unify the Jewish people after the Civil War of Hanukkah? Yeah.
This is way before.
This is way before?
Yes, way before. This goes back to the time of Noah.
Oh, God.
But the Gemara was written way after.
Yeah, but the Gemara can't come and decide something. The Torah is say the Torah is a Torah concept, what we call in Aramaic, Midoraita. And the rabbis can't come and say, well, the Torah said it should be written in Hebrew, so we're going to come and say it should be written in Greek. Whatever overriding political, impetus they have for that, they are not allowed to do that. They have to find something back in the Torah itself. And here, if you find it back in the Torah itself, it means that was permitted already from the time the Torah was given to write in Greek.
So they found a passage going way back to the giving of the Torah that said that Greek is a beautiful language. Greek words didn't even exist at that time.
Found is a very strong word to use. I don't think they found it. They knew about it the whole time.
So it didn't exist when the Torah was given. It wasn't a language.
They're contending it did, but they didn't. How do you know it didn't?
I studied a little bit of this stuff. I mean, I know enough to know that Greek didn't exist at that time.
What time are we talking about?
The time that the Torah was given from Sinai. I don't know, like what, 4,000 or 5,000 years ago?
Much less.
3,300. Yeah.
3,300 years ago, I think the Greek is pretty old. I would be skeptical. I would assume that it's as old as the Torah was given. Can I tell you for sure? I'm not a linguist. I don't know for sure. But we know that, you know, just to put things in perspective, Aristotle, Socrates lived at the time of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, right? Jeremiah the prophet, who was 1,000 years after the Torah was given. Less than 1,000 years after the Torah.
2,440
years. Right. So there was less than 1,000 years after the Torah was given, you had Yirmiyahu and Socrates at the same time. So I don't think Socrates was at the beginning of Greek culture for the Greek nation. I think it was probably somewhere along the way. So therefore, my guess is that it goes back, the Greek nation goes back much longer, and the Greek language goes back much longer.
The Greek nation comes from Athens.
What?
Don't we say that the Greek nation
comes from Athens? No, first of all, it's not Greek. That's Rome, and I don't think it's to be taken literally. Right. When Chazal identify Edom with Esav, they don't necessarily mean it's genealogical. They mean the idea of Esav is represented by
if it existed that early, it would have been materially different from the Greek that was spoken later when Greece ruled over Israel. I mean, it would have...
I have no idea.
There was a whole 3,000 years before the Common Era, there was.
What?
The Masonian culture, the Minoan culture, dates back thousands of years before the Common Era. And that gave a lot of rise to the Greek culture. A lot of them come from that time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they mention Yavan by name in the Torah itself. So I guess that means a people or a culture that's already to be recognized and reckoned with.
Right. I have recently listened to Herodotus on tape. You know who Herodotus was? A major Greek historian. So, you know, he goes back, way, way back. Herodotus lived, we know, like in the 2nd or 3rd century before the Common Era.
He made faith.
The Greeks were a very advanced civilization. So he was seen going way back, seems, you know, many hundreds, if not thousands of years before himself. So, maybe we're wrong, but we put the burden of proof upon you at the moment. So you come back for tomorrow, too, you can find out.
Do you have internet, Seth? Is that internet performing?
There's a library. Go to the library. Yeah, I do it. If you want to come over and look, we can take a look.
Okay.
So in any event, so the Gemara goes on and says, Bnei Yefes, the kids of Yefes were Gomer, Magog, this is of course a quote from the Torah, Gomer, Magog, Madai, the Yavon, you know, it says in the Torah itself that Yavon, were found that we assume of Greece, was a child of Yefes, the Tuvol Umeshef the Siras. Okay? So the Gemara translates some of these terms. Gomer is Garmamaya, which may or may not be Germany. Magog is... may or may not. I don't know. Gomer, Magog is Nagasaya. Modai is Kishmua. It's like the nation which we know, the Median nation. Yavan is Isus. I don't know what Isus is in Greece, but what? Tuval is Visnaya. Meshach is Visnaya. No. It's going back to the nations. Tiras, Rabbi Simon Amar, Poros, that Tiras is Persia. Rabban Amar, Tarka. Whatever Tarka is, again, I don't know. Maybe it's Turkey. I'm just guessing. Bnei Gomer, the children of Gomer, were Ashkenaz and Rifas, with Sugarmo. And the Yushama translate Asya, Vazayas, Vigar Menaiko. Maybe this is Germany. Bnei Yavan, Elisha, Vitarshisha, Kitim, and Zodanim. The Yushama translates Alstras, Avia, and Dardanaya. Okay, anyway, Esarodi, that's Rodis, that we know. Esarodi, that is Chametz, whatever that is. Eschamos is Hamas. At Lesher, at Lezmar, at Kolara. These are all places which obviously they knew about in those days, which we have no idea where they are today. At least I don't. Rav Yudan Bar Yudan Bar Shom, Rav Yudan Bar Yudan Bar Shom Amar, Mikan, now we're getting back to our topic. Mikan Lutargu. Okay? He said from here, the fact that... excuse me?
Well, I was translating what Targum is.
Translation. From here we know that this Kol Gemara before us, which bothered to translate everything into Aramaic or whatever language it translates into, from here we see it's important to go through the Torah and translate it or understand it in the common language based on our knowledge today. Okay, now getting back to our topic itself. I'm Rabbi Yehudah, the Beit Gubrin. Rabbi Yehudah from a place called Beit Gubrin said, Arba l'shoinos noim. There are four pleasant languages, Sheishtamish Bohem La'olam, which the world has given to you. Ve'ohem, and these are they. La'az, that's Greek. Rezena, for song.
I guess so, it sounds good when they're sung in Greek.
Romi, Roman,
which I imagine is Latin.
Lekra,
it's good for battles. That's a very violent language.
Thirsty, which is Aramaic. Is Rilaya is for lamentation.
It's lament in Aramaic.
And Hebrew is Lizibur. It's best to speak Hebrew.
Right, because Hebrew is a good language for speaking. Bad for Russian Akkadish as well.
Dileshomim, some say, at Ashuri Lissat. So to Ashuri, which is the Assyrian blockade we're previously talking about, that was given in order to be able to write, and of course to write, we mean most specifically for our purposes to say the Torah. The Gemara says, Ashmezen famous, Ashuri, Yesh lo Kfar, there is an alphabet which the Ashurim have, Reilohem, Reimoloshon, there is no independent language
for Ashur,
that they spoke somebody else's language. Conversely, says the Gemara, Hebrew, Yesh Oloshim is got a language, the Ein Lo Ksav, and it has no writing.
I imagine this means before it was given. There was no specific writing attached to Hebrew. They used the local alphabet. If you look in the sheets, of course, which we gave out the first day, the ancient Hebrew alphabet is common with many of the alphabets which were used in the vicinity by various different nations. Yes?
So like Yiddish, for Yiddish they used Hebrew, and for...
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, the same idea, right? Some languages they write that do not have. I'm sure there are many African dialects, right, which have no. Right, but they have no. They don't have their own. They don't have their own handwriting. They say they're illiterate, so therefore they have to make up. Well, I know in one certain African language, I forget which one, it's made up of a lot of clucks. and they have difficulty finding a letter with which to write that. I don't remember how they actually...
I'm not sure exactly where you're reading. Is this an opinion that says that Hebrew had no...
It's either Shalomi's opinion, yes.
So it's just an unnamed.
Yeah, it's just like the sum. I think it's Rabbi Yonah on the base Gubrin who's saying it because he was the one who began the statement. So I think we're still quoting him.
Okay.
Whoever he was.
He's disputed.
I don't think he's disputed explicitly, but we'll see.
Okay.
I don't think so. It might be that the subsequent opinions argue with him, but not directly. It may be that way. So he said. Bachru lohem, this is a strange language to use. Bachru lohem, they chose for themselves. If you look at the Korban Ha'ed, I have it underlined here. But the Bachru lohem, the Yisrael min ha'shamayim. It's not that, well, the Jews decided, hi Moshe, hey, let's get together, let's find an alphabet to use in order to write the Torah. Rather, according to Rabbi Yonah the Beit Gufrin, God chose for them, this is how you're going to speak, and this is how you're going to write it. So your speech is going to be Lashon HaKodesh, which we know they already had. But they're going to continue to speak Hebrew, and you're going to write it with this alphabet, which I'm going to give you the Ashurian alphabet. Okay, so the Romani called Shema Ashuri. Now, why is it called Ashuri? Actually, I didn't think we'd get, I forgot we were going to get this today. It's here. Why is it called Ashuri? So it's a Machlokes, actually. Why is it called Ashuri? One opinion, which is, seems to be still Rabbi Anderson, the Beit Gufrin speaking, Yeshua Mushar Biksavo. It is, Mushar literally means satisfied. Okay, it means it's aesthetically very pleasing. Hebrew is a beautiful way of writing.
Which one?
Hebrew. Ashuris, the black letters, which we have as in the center of this text here, that's a beautiful way of writing. So therefore, it's not Sat Ashuri because it came, according to him, it's not Sat Ashuri because it came from Assyria, but rather Sat Ashuri because it's Mushar. Mushar means it's very satisfying, it's very aesthetically pleasing, and that's why it's called Ashuri. So that is one opinion. Amar Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Levi disagrees with that. Rabbi Levi says, Al-Shem Sha'Allah Biyadam Mei Ashur. It's because it came back with them at the time that they came from Assyria. And when they come back from Assyria, when did Jews come back from Assyria? The time of the second building of the second temple. They went to Babylon, Assyria, these are all places which are near Persia, Media, these are all places which are contiguous to each other. They came back. And when they came back, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Ashurites, the Assyrians, are using this language. But this language was the language which they brought back with them when they came up from Assyria.
You're saying this is the second temple area, right? That they came back.
Excuse me?
You said that
second temple, yeah.
But this was before the second temple.
Oh,
I think this is after, right?
Yushami is after the second temple, yeah.
Okay.
So we have the two opinions. One is Ksav Mushar, it's a very pleasing, beautiful print. The other is that it came up from Assyria. It's a very, very basic difference between these two. Because if it says Ksav Mushar, it's a beautiful print, so you could say it was given at Mount Sinai. God came down and said to the Jews, here, let's write in this language. The Ruchos are in this language. But if you only came up with them from Ashur, then it would seem that it's a much later development. How it developed is murky and unclear, because at this point. But it must have developed later, right? When they came up from Assyria to find the second base of Mikdash.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, right? It could be they forgot it, like
right.
Babri says, and that they found it again. But let's see what Yushami says. Honor Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Levi said, I'm sorry, it's by the way. Tani Rabbi Yossi Amen. We have a brisa in which Rabbi Yossi said, Roi Haya Ezra Shetinatin Tara Yoda. Ezra, the scribe, who was one of the leaders of the movement back to the land of Israel at the time of the rebuilding of the Second Temple. So he was so holy, I guess, and wise that he could have given the Torah. Had there not been Moshe before him, he could have given the Torah. Elisha Kadmo Dor Moshe. But he was preempted. Right. It was preempted, preceded by the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so therefore he didn't get the opportunity. Nevertheless, Avot Yisroel Nitna HaTorah Al Yodo, even though the Torah is not given through him, Avu Nitan Ksav V'Loshon Al Yodo, he was given the Ksav, the alphabet, and the language, I assume the Aramaic language, not Hebrew, because Hebrew they already had, which was then introduced to the Jewish people. At the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, the first Beit HaMikdash, the Jews primarily spoke Hebrew. At the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, they primarily spoke Aramaic. But besides that, it seems that Ezra was the one who was given from heaven this writing which we use today. That it wasn't written that way in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, but rather it became the way we write when it was divinely revealed to Ezra as he was going back to the land of Israel. Okay, that's what it seems from here. And there's one of the things to prove from this. Uksav ha-nishtavon. It says there's a pasuk in Daniel. No, Ezra, sorry. A pasuk in Ezra. It says, so it talks about the alphabet, and it says, Uksav ha-nishtavon. It's the writing which was changed. Right? The writing which was changed, from what it was, it seems that it means it was changed from ancient Hebrew to Aramaic. Right? Kutsuv Aramis umeturgam Aramis. It was written Aramaic. See, the Gemara is using Aramaic and Assyrian interchangeably. I'm not sure why. But maybe Aram and Ashur are next to each other also. Kutsuv Aramis umeturgam Aramis. It was written in the Aramaic way of writing. And it was written in the Aramaic tongue as well. Now we switch to Pasuk in Daniel. You know, there's a famous story when the Shatzar, it's the way the Pasuk is explaining, the way the Rishon is explaining the Pasuk in Ezra, it's referring back to the famous story of Daniel with Belshazzar. Belshazzar was the last king of Babylon, and he made himself a big party, and at that big party, what happened?
The
writing on the wall, right? And the writing and wall, it's a thing of many tackle of passing the planet, that I forget exactly what it was. So in any event, nobody could read the writing.
Just weight, measure, and divide the
distance. There it is. Money, that's counted. Tackle is weight, and piracy means to split apart. No, Persians, I'm not sure what it's going to mean. So in any event, this writing nobody could read. So why could nobody read it? It was written in Aramaic, they spoke. Most of Daniel is written in Aramaic. Right, so why weren't they able to read it? So the Gemara is saying, because that was the first time the Ksav Ashuris, or Ksav Aramis, was used. It was that one was given from Shemayim. And nobody could read it except for Daniel. How can you read it?
Not yet.
Ruach HaKadosh.
No.
What?
Otherwise he would know.
Probably not, because they weren't using it before.
So the Bavli says the same thing, though. It's the only difference is that it seems that in this case they're saying Ezra had the writing on the wall and it's divinely given to him that now we should change the writing to Assyrian. Where the Bavli says that it originally was that language, but we weren't worthy of it. It was only in the fifth of Torah in the Ark, and only the top people knew it. And then everyone used this other script, and then Ezra, for some reason, decided, oh, everyone should know this now, and then wrote on the wall, and then it came back.
Was a major difference, isn't this?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so that's the difference. We're not going to finish with this, obviously.
It's not the first time, then, that it was written on the
No, it was.
But the Luchos was given, you said...
Not according to Yerushalmi. The Bible says Luchos were given in Aramaic.
The Summit has to be the name of the...
Be patient. We'll see what the Yerushalmi has to say about that. Okay, we'll come to that. So, says Gemara, so Malami Chavoba Yom Nisan. We learn from this that day it was given. The Torah, the new alphabet was given. Okay, another thing. It continues on. Nachman Be'ra'at Nitno HaTorah. Now the Korban Eidah says, and we'll see why on the next page. The Torah is given in Ra'at, which is in Ksav Ibris. In the ancient Hebrew sense. So here the Gemara spells it out explicitly. Right? It was given in Ra'at. Va'at Yokrav Yosef. And this goes to Rav Yosef because it in fact is a machlekes. It's a dispute how the Torah was given. Because Rebbe Oimer, Rebbe says, Ashuris Nitno HaTorah. The Torah was given in fact in the block print. Ukshachotu, when they sinned, fascinating thing, when they sinned, which I imagine means at the time of the Chet HaEgel, although I'm not sure. I'm not sure. It doesn't say which sin specifically here, but it says Nepak Lahen Levrat. So God punished them by taking away, at least from the nation at large, the Ashurist way of writing.
Oh.
The punishment. Because there are many secrets of the Torah which are attached to how the Torah was written, and they lost it. So it was a punishment, yeah.
This is why then the second Lukas didn't have the Sonic and the Mem, and they, because the first Lukas, right, they had the mental feet and the Sonic hanging, right?
Right.
But the second Lukas weren't as, like that.
They weren't?
They weren't?
I think so.
I don't think so.
Mark?
I remember reading it somewhere,
yeah,
where it said that the first one was in the shirt, the first set, and after they were smashed and after the sin, they were punished, and then the second set were in the other scripts, so they weren't as miraculous. So they were written by Moshe Yochargin rather than
God. Okay, I didn't know that.
So that would make sense, because like they did, because the first set of books was miraculous from all the sides. And
true,
the
but I thought it was going on the Torah. Maybe, I don't remember that it says it here, that that's the case. I thought it was just trying to say the Torah, not the Luchos. I don't remember such a thing. Could be right. I just don't remember. Okay? So he said, so beginning one, so according to Rebbe is the king of the Baalim. The Torah is given in Ashurit. It was given in the Assyrian print, or the beautiful print. They lost it as a punishment, and then they got it back. And Rebbe too was the Pasuk. The Pasuk in Zechariah. Zechariah was one of the prophets, the two prophets who was extant at the time of the beginning of the second period, second temple period. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi were the three prophets who were still functioning at the beginning of the second temple period. And the Pasuk in Zechariah says, Gam Hayom, also today, meaning right now when they're going back to the second temple, Magid Mishneh Ashivah, a second way of saying, I'm going to give back to you. Alright? So Magid Mishneh means a second, or the way we're explaining here is the Haggadah, you know, the way the Torah was told over or written over, was Mishuneh, was changed. Meaning that it was changed, but it was changed, not just changed, it was changed a second time. Meaning that initially it was changed from Ashurit to Ivrit. Now it was changed again, back from Ivrit to Ashurit. And Chaya is saying it's like a reward, right? Now that it's a rebuilding second base, that means God granted them back again to Ksav Ashurit. Yeah.
It goes everywhere. How is it that when they're giving it the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai and people with the golden calf, how come we didn't see that already? Why did he kind of continue to give the Ten Commandments that are going to be destroyed?
Is that really a nice deal as well?
No,
right?
I know. I know. It just came to my head then, and I thought, I'll ask you anymore. I'll probably forget.
Why did God, if I understand correctly, he's asking, if God knew they were going to sin with the golden calf, why did he give them the commandments?
Why did he give them the commandments?
Adam, right? Why did he put Adam in that Eden if he knew he was going to lose it in 2 hours?
No, but I'm saying that it was going on while he was giving the Ten Commandments.
Everything is going on at the same time,
right?
Everything has happened, will happen, it is happening.
Oh, right, yeah.
The whole issue which we could discuss maybe after the break, I mean, the week about the philosophy of sin, what exactly sin is, and how God relates to sin. But I can't answer that in 2 minutes.
No, that's okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, no problem.
So now it's Katzavlo es Mishnah HaTorah Hazos al Sefer. Not only that, says Rabbi, but you know what? It says about Moshe Rabbeinu that he wrote the Mishnah Torah. Mishnah Torah is one of the terms used for Sefer Dvarim. So what he's explaining, Ksav Shu Asui Lishtanos. He wrote it in Ashurit, but it's already known that it's going to be Mishuneh. It's going to be changed. Already in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu was known that the writing would be changed. I don't know when the sin was. I guess it wasn't at the Chet HaEgel, because it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Sefer Torah itself in Ashurit at the time, with the prophecy embedded in the language, Mishnah Torah, that the Torah is going to change. No, that would still be earlier than that, because the Mishnah Torah is Hormuz he wrote on the last day of his life.
So the sin of the golden calf caused the writing?
No, I'm saying I don't think of this. Because it seems like when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the last lines of the Torah, he wrote it in, maybe it is, if you look at Korban 8 at the bottom, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu, second line of the bottom of Korban 8, Ramah's going to Moshe Rabbeinu, where Moshe's Luz Ashikas, Sab says should be Yomav, that this writing, which he was writing in his day, Ativishtanos min Ivri Rashuris. It's not going to change from Hebrew to Assyrian. So I guess, yeah, at the time of the golden calf or the spies or sometime in the Midbar changed, and Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah in Assyrian, and he wrote those words, Mishnah Torah, to allude to the fact that eventually it's going to change back again. With this, by the way, you can understand a fascinating Gemara Menachos. I never made this connection before. The Gemara Menachos says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down to Rabbi Akiva's Shir once, and he sat in Rabbi Akiva's Shir, a very famous Gemara, and he couldn't understand what was going on. And he became, you know, depressed, the Gemara says, so to speak. Couldn't understand what was going on. Rabbi Akiva, you know, was many generations later. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, you have Rabbi Akiva. Why are you giving me this Torah? You should give this Torah to Rabbi Akiva. So he was not, he didn't become, you know, he was not placated until Rabbi Akiva quoted him, so to speak, and she said, this we know how lawful and Moshe Mishina. So it's a very strange Gemara, right? And many, many, I don't either. I'm going to explain it to you now. It's a very strange Gemara, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, why is Moshe Rabbeinu? What did Moshe Rabbeinu understand? Secondly, why was he placated when Rabbi Akiva said, this is halacha l'moshe m'sinai, why to make it feel better? Big deal. It means just Moshe did, Hashem gave it to Moshe, but it doesn't mean Moshe was so great. So what was going on? So I think I just now said a sort of shot. We know Rabbi Akiva's main, one of Rabbi Akiva's major accomplishments was that he knew how to darshan takin. You know what takin are? On the top of the crowns, right, on the crowns on the top of the letters in the Torah. And he knew how to bring out tremendous, tremendous drushos from the Tagging. So what's going on? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the Tagging, right? Because by the time Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Torah, at least most of the Torah, it was being written, according to the Yerushalmi, in Ivrit, right? In that Hebrew print, which has no Tagging. So therefore, he comes down to Rabbi Akiva Shia, Rabbi Akiva starts his Tagging, right? And he got depressed because he figured what the main part of Torah, the writing of the Torah, he was missing. Right? Because look at all these things which come from the writing, and he didn't get it, he didn't have access to it. So then, finally, Rabbi Akiva says, no, halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Don't think that things come from the Tagging. The Tagging allude to halachos, but the actual source of halachos is Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's what made Moshe Rabbeinu happy. In other words, if the Tagging are like icing on the cake, but the primary, basic source for all the Torah is the halacha l'moshe m'sinai.
So from that view, the Torah scrolls that were in the Ark were written in Ivrit?
Yeah, according to this, it would be written in Ivrit, right. Right, that's correct.
And it was completed, so then the only place where Assyrius was used before it came back in Ezra's time was on the Ten Commandments tablets themselves before they were crushed.
Well, according to you.
No,
I didn't say the second tablets were written in Hebrew, as you said.
No, not the second tablets. I'm talking about the first tablets.
I know the first tablets, yeah, but I think the second tablets are also written because they're after the sin, you mean, so therefore...
But I'm saying, according to this, the only thing actually written in the script we have today back then, was the Ten Commandments, and those were crushed right away.
Right.
I didn't remember it.
That's right. Yeah. So that, okay. That's one of my tactics. Forget that question.
Where are the Tagging also not inherent?
They're written on the letter Shatnez Gate, but they're not inherent. You're right. The Tavitar doesn't have Tagging, it's still kosher. So obviously the Tagging has some other... They come from somewhere else. It must be. That's the understanding point of this Gemara. They weren't given halacha much meat, and they were given later on. Okay. No matter how you learn this Gemara, as long as you assume that even whether you assume the Ashurus was only given at the time of Ezra, or whether you assume was given at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, but then wasn't used for many years, so then no matter what, the Tagging were only put into the Sefer Torah much later. And somehow this is a revelation which came to Ezra HaSoifer, right? It's called Ezra HaSoifer, because he was the scribe. And this revelation was given to him how to write the Torah with the Tagging. That's what you assume according to Shalmi.
I learned that Moshe, as he wrote the crowns,
right. But not that's true. That's the conventional way of learning, according to the Babri. But there's one you shall me to learn it differently. That's true.
Also, what was the thing that you said about some communities not having a separate Torah and some communities having Torah? Did you mention that?
Yesterday.
What was, can you repeat that? Like,
it seems like most people didn't have access to the Sefer Torah because There was a certain man, Pliny Oshio, they opened the Torah and they found all sorts of things which seemed to be a novelty in his time.
The title of who?
Yoshio, one of the later kings.
So it could be that because they couldn't read?
It could be, but it seems, it could be that because they were illiterate, but it may also be because the Sefer Torah wasn't as widespread as we have it today. So they just didn't have the, it wasn't sent around the same, wasn't, they weren't written as many as we write today. I don't know.
Sometimes
it could be the way.
The opposite.
Okay, it could be, we don't know. Anything we say is just our own smarter. We don't know for sure. So let's just finish this page so we can get to the next page at least tomorrow. So says tomorrow, the Torah was for sure given in Ashuris. And what tells us this? What's the reason I say this? It's a fascinating thing. Who has the page on the first day?
Who's got the page?
It says like this. The way he's expounding it, it says, I'm not sure exactly where this is true, but he says, Vavei Amudim above, and the Torah talks about Vavei Amudim, the hooks of the Amudim, right? The hooks which were put on the pillars to hold up the curtains in the Beis HaMikdash. The way he's expounding this letter, he's saying that the Vavei Amudim, he's saying, Shiyu Vavim Shel Torah, Benim Lamudim. The Vavs of the Torah are supposed to be like pillars. Right, so he's saying that the only way you have a above like a pillar is if it looks like this. I guess this way it's not as similar to a pillar as it is this way. So that's what I want to say from expounding this verse, these words, Vavei Amudim, that the Torah was given in the Ashuris. Okay? Tomorrow we're going to see the other slate. Tomorrow we'll see the other opinion, which I'll give out tomorrow in the next page. And then we'll sum it up. I hope.
The last one out here, which is the most modern, so to speak, on here, is from 2nd century BCE, which would have been before Temple times, right? 2nd century BCE? Oh, yeah, okay, so 2nd Temple times, right? But these arguments, the Gemara and the Mishnah, are taking place like a couple hundred years or the most 400 years, which isn't that long. I mean, if 500 years ago, English was completely different.
Which one of the Torah was? The Torah was given in the Torah?
That's what he's saying.
No,
in other words, the writing of the original Torah on the commandments on the Torah was like that.
Okay, so on the commandments, but not on the
Torah scroll itself.
In the Torah scroll itself.
Yeah.
And then what happened to that Torah scroll?
It was in the base of the But we don't have, or they lost access to it because it was buried together with the auto several decades before the day that it was destroyed.
Yeah.